All right, let's talk about Ukraine and what's going on in Ukraine and what's going on with the corona over there, because there are reports coming out from various independent journalists, and I'm looking at the UNS report right now, Alexander, from Anatoly Karlin, who's I would say he's an excellent statistician. He really knows how to break down numbers and look at the meaning behind statistics and numbers. And he has a very interesting piece about Ukraine, and it's titled "Ukraine is a Corona Hotspot." And there are a lot of underlying problems in Ukraine on the government level, on the structural level, the political, economic level before Corona hit. And now that Corona has hit, not many people are talking about how badly affected Ukraine is. But Anatoly Karlin does make the case, and he backs it up with a lot of interesting statistics, that Ukraine is in bad shape already and could possibly be an one of the worst cases in Europe. And I quote, "There is a high chance that within the next few weeks, the Ukraine will emerge as one of Europe's worst corona hotspots." And it's interesting because he ties it in with the fact that a lot of Ukrainians are working in Europe in places which are pretty much ground zero for the virus. For example, Lombardy, Italy, or in the UK, or in France, or in Germany. And they're going to be returning back to Ukraine. Once again, the borders may be closed for non-Ukrainian citizens, but Ukrainian citizens, a large part of the population that is working in Europe, and they have been working for a long time now in hotspots and in ground zero locations for corona, will be coming back to the country. And I thought this was a very interesting point that he was making. But Alexander, get into this story, get into what's happening to Ukraine. If you want to touch upon before the corona and how corona is going to affect the Zelensky government going forward, get into that as well. And of course, touch upon Anatoly Karlin's article on UNS report.
Which I should say, I thought that was an excellent article, and I thought extremely well argued and with all the facts at his fingertips. And can I just add, I do think Karlin has a mastery of figures and statistics, which is quite exceptional. But anyway, let's just look at the general situation in Ukraine, because what many people, many of our viewers may not be aware of, is that Ukraine has been spiraling down again in the last weeks before the corona crisis struck. I mean, this has not been very widely publicized, but it is a fact. Now, if we go back last year, there was the election. Which the presidential election, which the previous president, the Maidan president, Petro Poroshenko, lost by a huge margin, and which led to this enormous groundswell of support for Zelensky, who was the new president of Ukraine, a person, an actor who'd done a comedy program on one of, well, sort of comedy program on Ukrainian television, who came as a new face. He was going to deal with corruption. He spoke Russian, which made him attractive to the Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine. He was going to seek peace with the eastern Ukrainians who are in rebellion against the central Ukrainian government, and he's going to mend fences with Russia. So he was this young, dynamic, attractive leader. And what has happened is that many of the doubts many people had about him, about whether he would be able to change the situation in Ukraine, I'm afraid have proved true. He has proved an extremely ineffectual manager and administrator. He's not been able to establish a functioning government. There was a major governmental crisis just a few weeks ago, with the prime minister, blurting out, being caught on tape, saying that in economics, Zelensky is a complete economics ignoramus. And this was then followed by a major power struggle between Zelensky and his very own prime minister, and that prime minister has resigned. And the people who took over, who became, the new government, many of them, interestingly enough, were people drawn from previous governments, many of which had served under the former president, Viktor Yanukovych, who was overthrown in the Maidan events of February 2014. It's really extraordinary to see how we're almost back in that respect to ground, you know, to ground zero. We're back where we started. It's all the same faces. A lot of the same faces are coming back, occupying the same sort of positions. And it's as if Ukraine can't seem to break away from that kind of politics that has been, you know, oligarch-dominated politics that has been its characteristic ever since it achieved independence of the Soviet Union back in 1991. And the only figure that remains and who's been consistently in charge of the Interior Ministry ever since the Maidan events of February 2014 is Arseniy Avakov, who is this extraordinary anti-Russian hardliner. I saw an article, a very interesting article, again, very insightful in some ways, by the Seiker on this very same topic. But I disagreed with it on one point, because he says that, in his opinion, Avakov is just an opportunist. I think, on the contrary, Avakov is a fanatical anti-Russian hardliner. And it is very symptomatic of the situation that Zelensky apparently is unable to sack him, because I get the impression that Avakov is backed by the ultra-right wing, ultra-nationalist, viscerally anti-Russian, extreme right, neo-Nazi in many cases, or outright Nazi in some cases, hardliners who operate all these very, very powerful right-wing militias, and that Zelensky feels that he can't dismiss Avakov, because if he ever did dismiss Avakov, all of these people would be mobilized and his own position would be in jeopardy. So we already have a bad situation in Ukraine. And now we have Corona coming. And what was very interesting about Ukraine is that it's completely dysfunctional and broken down government seems, public administration and health system seems to be completely unable to cope with it. So Karlin, as of the time when he wrote his article, said that Ukraine has only done about 600 tests in a country which whose population, nobody knows quite how big its population is, but figures vary between 30 and 40 million. So it's a big country, but there's only been 600 tests there. Two people have already died, one in his 40s, another in her 30s. And as Karlin points out, this is unrepresentative of the usual pattern of deaths as a result of this infection. In Italy, the average age of the people who die is around 80. So that suggests that there's many, many more people who've contracted this infection and who are dying, but are simply not being noticed. And we're hearing all kinds of reports that the hospitals in Ukraine are actually swamped with people who are desperately ill with the corona and are not being counted or measured properly. And that in fact the hospitals are, and this is again what Karlin says, grossly unprepared to deal with the crisis of this kind anyway, that there's nowhere near enough ventilators in Ukraine. And I mean, he mentions that the numbers, which are, you know, some of the numbers are, you know, unbelievable. I mean, you know, just hundreds of ventilators, where Russia has 40,000. Ukraine may have perhaps hundreds. Another study puts them at about 3,000. But anyway, nowhere near enough. And of the really advanced ventilators that are needed in extremely dangerous cases, the whole country, it seems, has fewer than you would find in a single Chinese hospital. So, I mean, it's a really desperate situation. health-wise. And by the way, it corresponds with what I'm hearing. And now we come to the major problem, which is, of course, that Ukraine did take certain steps to control its borders. But as you absolutely rightly said, and as Carlin also points out, millions of Ukrainians have been working in Europe as foreign workers there. And in fact, what has been sustaining the Ukrainian economy, given the fact that the country has effectively, essentially deindustrialized, what has been sustaining the Ukrainian economies over the last couple of years are three things. Firstly, it's agriculture. I mean, it has some of the richest and most fertile land in the world. Funds that have been it has been getting from the IMF and the European Union, which are now drying up and have been drying up for some time, and these massive remittances from these young people who have been working in Europe and in Russia too, by the way, but principally in Europe. And of course, one of the things that was used to sell the idea to the Ukrainian people that, an alignment with Europe would be a good thing was this offer of work for young Ukrainians in Europe. And so millions of them have gone. Millions of them are now coming back. They're in all the hot spots that you mentioned, Lombardy, Germany, of course, many of them are in Germany. They're coming back to Ukraine. Many of them will be infected. Ukraine apparently doesn't have the resources to monitor them or to carry out the necessary tests. It doesn't have the means to treat them and or to place them in quarantine. Its public administration is very weak. Its health system is very, very fragile. Its economy was already shaky. Its government is consists of a bizarre mix of people, from all kinds of oligarch backgrounds, and it scarcely seems in any condition to cope with this problem. I would add that I saw a report, which it should be said was from TASS, Russian news agency, maybe not the most impartial thing, but it mentioned that Zelensky's trying to the best extent that he can to control the situation. He's taken all kinds of steps, like closing the metro system in Kiev down. That has created massive problems of a different kind. And in fact, it might actually be spreading the disease because the public transit systems are now becoming choked as people are trying to move around and are becoming exposed. And as a result, are passing the infection amongst each other. And so this is a grave situation. One is desperately sorry for this poor country, this unhappy country, where it seems all these problems, one after the other, are coming home. And one wonders where all this is going to end.
All right, Alexander, let's look at some of the numbers from the article. And referencing Ukrainians working in Corona hotspots, the number in Lombardy, Carlin puts it at 70,000. That's massive. Yeah, 70,000 in Lombardy, ground zero for Corona in Europe. Let's look at some of the testing numbers, Alexander. And Russia has performed 122,854 tests as of March 18. In per capita terms, that's about as much as Taiwan, France, or Canada, not to mention three times as much as the US. And I believe the number in Russia at the moment stands at around 253 confirmed cases. So 122,854 tests, 253 confirmed. Once again, from the article, another comparison we can make is with Belarus. As a functional country, it has managed to perform 16,000 tests, of which 51 have come in positive. So 51 out of 16,000 tests. There are only 9.5 million Belarusians relative to an estimated 37.5 million Ukrainians, which translates to a four-fold difference. And Alexander, you lump in there the fact that you're going to have millions of Ukrainians working in hotspots, ground zero, corona hotspots in Europe coming back home. They're either going to get kicked out of the countries that they're in and forced to come back home, or they're going to come back home out of fear of staying in those hot spots. But either way, whichever way you look at it, there's no doubt that a good chunk of them are going to be carriers of the corona. And on the other side, Alexander, on the money side of things, now that every country is going through this corona crisis, from the US to the EU, I cannot imagine the IMF, the EU, and the US is going to be in any position to keep Ukraine afloat as it has been doing, as you previously mentioned in your previous segment, economically, as has been happening for the past 5, 6 years. So that's going to be another massive problem for the Zelensky government.
Absolutely. And I mean, to be clear, only a fraction of these people will probably try to come back from Ukraine to Ukraine from Europe. We don't know how big that fraction is going to be. I'm going to guess quite a significant one. However big it is, Ukraine is not in a position to quarantine for 14 days, as say Russia does. You go to Russia, you're quarantined for 14 days now, as I understand it, before you can actually move around the country. The Ukraine doesn't have those resources. It doesn't have the means to do it, and the numbers are simply too great anyway.
70,000 just in Lombardy, just
Well,
in
it's just
Lombardy.
Lombardy, exactly. I mean, we're talking about millions of people, possibly. Possibly. You can't control movements on that scale. Check your test or move people on that scale. And Ukraine has hardly been doing tests anyway. So it's a situation where the government really has no means to control this thing. Now, this is a disaster for Ukraine. It's also a disaster for everyone else. It's a disaster for Europe because it means that you're going to have probably corona, running out of control in Ukraine and completely unchecked. And again, I know an awful lot of people are saying that, corona isn't perhaps quite as dangerous a disease as some people are say it is, and it's they're comparing it with a cold and all of that. What I would simply say about that is one of the reasons so many people are surviving is because they're being treated. They're being tested and found and treated, because that's what's happened in China, and that's what happens in Europe, and that's what happens in the United States. If it can't be done in Ukraine, if there's no treatment for these people, and the disease spirals out of control, well, then we will get a much clearer idea, if I may say, of how high the death rates can be. And indications from Italy are that they could be actually considerably higher than some of these minimalist numbers I've been seeing in a situation, as I said, where the disease has no real, well, there's no real steps taken to control the disease and to treat the people who are infected by it. So that's one thing to say. But on top of everything else, if you have a disease spreading and incubating within Ukraine, there has to be a huge danger that it's going to spread from Ukraine back to Europe and, of course, to Russia. And Carlin makes the point that because of the fact that there's these breakaway regions in eastern Ukraine, and that pensioners there cross the border, the line of control to go back into Ukraine to pick up their pensions and then come back from Ukraine, there is a real danger that this will spread from Ukraine into these two breakaway republics and via those two breakaway republics into Russia itself. Now, the Russians have the situation in Russia itself under some kind under control, and I am sure that they are aware of this danger and they will act to contain it. But nonetheless, that danger is there. And as for the Europeans, how do they respond if they find a crisis of this magnitude in Ukraine? I don't know. I mean, they promised the Ukrainian people that they would be helping them, that Europe would look after them, that it would admit them ultimately to the European Union, that, as I said, that young Ukrainians could come to Europe to work and study. I don't see any of these things happening.
They
I
abandoned
think
Italy, Alexander.
they will abandon them.
Europe abandoned Italy.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's going to be very, very hard for the people of Ukraine. And they're going to learn, it seems to me, and I say this with no pleasure, they're going to learn that, you know, all these promises that they were given back in 2014 and before, unfortunately, are so much emptier.
Do you think there's any possibility that, or any appetite for the IMF or for the EU or for the US to continue funding Ukraine in the ways they have been?
No, not in a situation like the kind we're seeing at the moment. I mean, the overriding priority in the United States is to keep financial markets operating. Whether they should be, by the way, is another question. But that's the primary concern. They're not going to be concerned about Ukraine. Ukraine is a geopolitical piece in a chessboard, which has just been upturned because everybody is concerned now about dealing with this health emergency. Try telling the American people we should be giving another $20 billion to Ukraine at a time like this. It's not going to go down very well at all. The only people, and I say this again, who might be willing to help Ukraine, because a lot of people in Russia still feel an emotional connection to Ukraine, are the Russians. But of course, we come back to the problem of people like Arseniy Avakov, the interior minister. They are dead against any kind of reconciliation with Russia. So long as those people retain power in Ukraine, Ukraine is stuck, it seems to me, because the Europeans and the West don't want it, and the Ukrainians don't want help from the only country that might be willing to provide it.
What a horrible situation.
Indeed. What sort of help, by the way? Well, the answer is very, very straightforward. Things like ventilators, things like testing equipment, those kind of things. And of course, behind the Russians are the Chinese. If the Russians become involved in Ukraine, so would the Chinese be. And they've got, you know, immense resources. But the Ukrainians need to be prepared to accept that kind of help. Perhaps the Ukrainian people are, but I don't think the Ukrainian political system is prepared to accept it still. And as we've seen, Zelensky has proved a broken reed. He's proved the Saker called him a zero, and I'm afraid he's wrong.
It'll be very interesting to see as this progresses and things get worse, if the neo-Nazis in power, how they're going to react in this type of life or death situation, if they will be willing to accept help from Russia. No, as you always say, Alexander, all you need to do is look at a map and you'll see which country is best positioned to help Ukraine. Not only geographically located, Russia's position next to Ukraine, but of course, common culture, language, and all the other things, the brotherly relationship that they have had.
Absolutely.
In the past. Makes it a natural fit for Russia to step in and help Ukraine in a crisis that looks like it's going to be very, very dramatic for the country. And on a final note, Alexander, it was just 3 months ago that Adam Schiff made statements like, you know, we have to do everything in our power to protect Ukraine against Russia.
Well,
you know, those words don't carry much meaning.
Well, they don't care for Ukraine. They never did carry any meaning because, of course, Adam Schiff isn't really interested in Ukraine in terms of his people. He's only interested in Ukraine for two things. Firstly, for what he and his chums can get out of Ukraine, because as we've discussed often in our programs, all sorts of people in the Washington establishment have had their finger in that particular pie and have been doing very well out of it. So, I mean, that's one thing that Adam Schiff was concerned about. And the other thing, of course, is that he was using Ukraine as a stick to beat Donald Trump with in that ludicrous impeachment that he and Pelosi and Nadler all launched, which seems now like a debate from another time. So Adam Schiff isn't going to come to Ukraine's rescue. Those are words.
Joe Biden won't.
So much empty air to say it frankly, like all the big words from the Europeans also, you know, from Merkel and all the others. I mean, Ukraine was in a bad way, to be very clear, before 2014. It was in a worse way after, and it's now going to be in a worse way still. I mean, it's just It's just terrible. But will those all those terrible people, the neo-Nazis and the right-wing militias, will they come? Will they be ever come to a point where they accept help from Russia? Absolutely not. I remember back in 2015, when Ukraine was facing massive energy shortages and there were blackouts in many Ukrainian cities, very controversially and against overriding opposition from some people in Russia, Putin orders coal and gas and oil deliveries to Ukraine in order to keep those lights back on. And of course, the Ukrainians, as I understand it, never repaid the Russians financially for any of that. It was all humanitarian assistance. Did it win over any of these people? Of course not. They will never accept any kind of rapprochement with Russia. That is inconceivable. It's not going to happen. The only way that Ukraine can reconcile with Russia is if people in Ukraine finally are prepared to face these people down. These people have guns. They've shown before that they're prepared to use it, and that might be extremely difficult to do. So that's also the problem Ukraine has, and it's difficult to see how it can be solved. But, one mustn't despair. Despair, as I always say, is a bad counselor. Perhaps there will be eventually some kind of political mobilization in Ukraine as things become desperate there. The Zelensky election, if it did nothing else, showed what 75% of Ukrainians want and think. It remains to be seen how much longer an obsessed and passionate and violent and dangerous minority can continue to hold a whole nation hostage.
Yeah, I agree with you, Alexander, and hopefully one day the people of Ukraine will stop letting these corrupt oligarchs rule over them. We'll stop letting these neo-Nazis in the West rule over them, and we'll stop letting these carpetbaggers like Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and Pelosi's kids and all these people come to their country and completely gut it out.
Yes.
Because when you gut out the country like they have been doing for the past 5 years, a crisis like this comes along and you're left, up, what's creek, for lack of a better word.
Well, absolutely. And that's entirely right. I mean, the only thing I would say is I don't think it's going to happen anytime very soon. But then you never know. I mean, things can suddenly happen and they can happen very unexpectedly. And perhaps, dare I say it, if I can point to the two obvious places which might launch, a sort of counter moves to this. Odessa, obviously, which is this extraordinary and great city on the Black Sea, which is a long history of resistance. I mean, people in Odessa resisted the Germans very, very bravely during the Second World War. So it has a long tradition of resistance. And Kharkov, which is this big industrial city in the east of Ukraine. And again, as to my knowledge, an awful lot of people there are very disaffected. So, if there's going to be a sort of major counter move, those are probably the two places one should look to for it to start. But, it has to happen. And at the moment, the people we were talking about, the Arsen Avakovs and their followers, are still very much in control.
Yeah, Odessa, the city of Catherine the Great, and Kharkiv, which is the second capital.
Indeed.
Of Ukraine. All right.
Absolutely.
Yes. Alexander Becker, Editor Chief of the Durand. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell. Smash that like button. Donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and subscribe. Star, your donation helps keep this channel up and running. And look for us on SoundCloud and iTunes for an audio copy of this video. And please go to the Durand shop and pick up some awesome Durand merchandise, magic mugs, and cool polo shirts like the one Alexander is wearing right now.
Indeed, so exactly. And can I just talk about our magic mugs first? I mean, obviously, this has the Russian symbol. We've been talking about Ukraine and about its need for a rapprochement with Russia. This is the symbol of the Russian Federation. And of course, it's important to say that the double-headed eagle has a very long history. And it started with the Byzantine Empire, of which Alex and I, we have a historic connection because it was a Greek-speaking empire, very much part of our Greek history. And of course, it had the double-headed eagle, and it had a major presence on the Black Sea and in the territories that are now called Ukraine. It was also present in Crimea, by the way, which the Byzantines called Kherson. So, we have all those long connections, and it's something that ought, in my opinion, because the Russians have also got this connection with the Greek Orthodox Byzantine world, it ought to be something that pulls all these nations together, not pulling them apart. So that's the history lecture. Let's come to the mugs. They are magnificent mugs. They are beautiful. They are strong. They are light. You can see that they are made from wonderful porcelain. They have this wonderful sort of glossy look to them, which is amazing. And they keep your tea and coffee hot, as I've discovered many times. I've even discovered, I don't recommend this, but you can put it in a microwave and you could take it out and the coffee is hot. And the handle, believe it or not, is cold. I didn't believe it could happen, but I've tried it several times and it actually works. I don't recommend it because it's a way to ruin good coffee and tea. It's much better to reheat them in, a pot or something like that if you're going to do that at all. But anyway, just saying that these are amazing mugs. They're the best coffee and tea mugs you can have. And I say that without any qualification at all. I've had many in my time, and none have remotely been as good as these. And can I say the same is true of these stupendous and magnificent polo shirts? Alex was talking about the fact that I'm wearing this amazing one now, and it is truly amazing. It is the epitome of smart casual. I've worn my polo shirts to very, very elegant places, and I look fine in them. It's 100% cotton. It fits beautifully. It's incredibly comfortable. It can be worn in all kinds of temperature and weather conditions. And you can see that it's got the double-headed eagle of the Durand there, which is different from the Russian eagle. It's a little closer to the Byzantine one, but not the same, because it's our very own double-headed eagle, which floats over the world and watches everything that happens. And it has two heads. One looks to the east and one looks to the west, as we do. And we don't just have polo shirts, by the way, in many colors. This one is dark blue, but you can find them in all sorts of colors in our shop. We've also got amazing t-shirts, all of them also 100% cotton, all of them made to the same exceptional standard. And you can find them long sleeved and short sleeved. And you can also find V-neck shirts too. And you can find hats and hoodies and stickers. And you can find books, e-books that we've done on subjects like Russiagate and Ukrainegate, which we were just talking about on this program, and Brexit, and also Epstein. And so if you want to support the Durand, and we come under constant pressure from YouTube and from all sorts of others, you can support us. The best way to support us, one of the best ways to support us, is by coming to our shop, because that way you also get for yourself all these wonderful things. So don't hold back. Come to our shop, support the Durand, be the owner of these wonderful things, and Alex will tell you how.
Just go to the durandshop.com. You'll find a link in the description box down below. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.